I'm not sure that I need to read the gospel lesson this morning. I think we heard it. In fact, it was a much better rendition than I had planned. It was interactive, but for the sake of formality, let's hear this again, as is written in Luke chapter 15, verses 1 through 3 and 11 through 32. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the property that will belong to me." So he divided his property between them. And a few days later, the young son gathered all he had and traveled off to a distant country. And there he squandered his property in desolate living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took over that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him in his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? And here I am dying of hunger. I'll get up and I'll go to my father and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. And I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. And he ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And then get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed a fatted calf because he's got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I never disobeyed your command. And yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him?' And then the father said to him, 'Son, you're always with me, and all that I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.'" This is the word of the Lord. It is an old and familiar story we heard and heard again. And as I saw this and remembered it, the message slowly changed this week from when I started out. And the message came to me, "Can you see what's right in front of you?" Maybe the question should be, maybe are you looking at what is right in front of you? Do you ever stand in front of something or walk past something and wonder, "Where in the world is it? I can't find it." If we went and changed something in the lobby out here, would you even see it when you walk in Sunday morning? In Lent, are we focused on God who gave us that wonderful end to Lent, a time to celebrate? Or we just focused on ourselves and what we've had to give up. You know, the poor me syndrome. I'm without candy, or I'm without cigarettes, or I'm without coffee or something. And I'll get there yet. And all we're doing is waiting for that Easter candy to arrive so we can go back eating sweets. Probably I'm one of the worst ones here to not notice things around you. If you've been at my shop where I work, I can set things down, walk around it three times, and it totally disappeared, and I cannot see it. I'm not sure whether I'm not focused on what I'm doing, or forgetful of what it might be. I really think there's a bad spot in the glasses. They block it all. In our gospel today, there's a testimony to this human problem. A very strong testimony. The family dynamics then were far less flexible than they are today. The stories that Jesus used were meant to teach listeners very important lessons. Listen so they didn't have to remember rules and regulations. But stories stick with you, as we heard today. As I was preparing this message and studying the scriptures on Monday, I've been going through it, and I must admit I've been through this particular passage, I don't know, 15, 20 times. And I've preached on it several times. So I took a break when I was at the computer, and I went and checked on what my kids were doing on Facebook, and then I came back. But I went through one of them, and there was this little short video thing somebody had posted on Facebook. And the context was a group of musicians, not just ordinary musicians. They all had military uniforms. Not just one country, several countries were joined together. So I'm thinking that this ought to be a good marching, stirring band, you know, off the victory kind of music. Let's hear where it goes. And this solo trumpet started out beautifully and slowly. It started playing the Unchained Melody. Some of you may remember that. It was a famous song that was made famous by the Righteous Brothers. A beautiful love song is what it is. And this big military orchestra slowly gathered in and filled it with such wonderful music about love, not war. 200 or 300 people, all in uniform, playing a message of love. It just was not what I expected. I had to see it. In fact, I had to see it again to see what was there, because I wasn't looking for that, and I almost did not see it. It really caused me to stop. So as I went back to the scriptures, that music is flowing through my mind and what I just saw. And I looked at those scriptures again, this gospel lesson in Luke, and I saw something I had not been looking for there. We read about a young son crawling back to seeking forgiveness for his wasted life. It was more than that. It was more than an older son feeling cheated and taken advantage of. I saw that gospel as a beautiful love story about a father who loved both his sons more than they realized, and obviously more than they could see. So let us look at that story one more time and try to look at it through the Jewish eyes of the crowd that was listening to Jesus that first time. Remember, Jesus was telling the story to Pharisees, who were the elite, the super people. They had all the answers, the great religious ones. And he also was there because of the great sinners, the ones that probably they called the scum of the earth, you know, tax collectors and sinners of all kinds. And they had already judged him for what he was doing. But each character in that story that he told them represents somebody in that culture. The father was obviously God. The elder son was the Pharisees and the teachers who stood there in criticism of him. The younger son represented that class of tax collectors and other assorted sinners, outcasts. So where is the lesson of love? The one about love. Was the older son so filled with jealousy of what he thought his younger brother was getting that he could not see his father's love? Was the younger son so jealous of his older brother that he hated the future that he had and he wanted his father dead so he could have the money and get out of there? He wanted to blow that town. Done. Gone. Out of there. Sometimes it reminds me of the teenagers about that last year of high school. I got to get out of here. I'm going to go set the world on fire. But they can't even find a dry match. Oh, that seemingly impossibility of youth to see past themselves, as it was for this young man. He could not see past himself. He could only see his frustration and not the family that nurtured him and protected him and gave him a phenomenal environment for that time. Yet his father loved him enough to let him go with all that property. And not to severely punish him or throw him out as he should have done, or even worse, the father could have done to that son. Then the older brother, seeming equally blind to the situation that he lived in all those years, grudgingly working long, hard hours with the burden of the rules he lived under, and not a drop of joy in the relationships with his family. Not a drop. Now with the younger brother gone, and now he seemed to have everything there, except he didn't have the joy of life. A joy that neither son would claim or would see or probably weren't even looking for. Do we still see that older brother or that younger brother around us today? Are they in our hometowns? The hard part is when we see them in our houses, in our homes, and maybe once in a while we see a little bit when we look in the mirror. Maybe one or two of those are very close, closer than we think. I wonder, is our faith, as we come to worship, boring because I've got to get it done or get out and do this? And I've heard people say, I get nothing out of worship. It doesn't feed me. Or it's so much work that we can't enjoy worship. It's just another burden we carry, having to go to church on Sunday. A reality check here. Worship is not about self. Worship is not about self. It's about worshiping God with joy for all that's been done to you and celebrating and encouraging others that are around you and sharing that great love that God has meant. Because that's what makes us a church family. It is love, not the task. Just as Lent is not about Easter or Easter candy at the end of that long time of denial, do we come first to worship God and then to lift up our brothers and sisters in Christ, enjoying them, sharing them, singing to them, making a difference in their lives? For truly it is in giving that we receive and in loving that we are loved. That's where it comes. It's worse than probably a marriage. There is no love and only obligation. I could not imagine one. I can't imagine the family. Even though there is rivalry between brothers and sisters. I had two older brothers and one younger sister. I'm kind of used to that game. You know, as much as it was, if there wasn't love there, there wasn't life there. And the father in this case, in this story, had more love than he needed to for each of them. All they had to do was accept it. At the end of our story, we see that the younger son, who was so far away from his father, is now closer than the one who stayed right there at home. He saw what he had missed. Closest, though, Closeness is not about physical location, but about relationships. Loving relationships. Neither son could see what love the father had offered them in the very beginning. The elder did not appreciate the gift that his father offered him. The gift that offered was not money or property, but a loving relationship with the one who stayed with him. Can we see the love of our Father, the one who offers us the great gift of his Son? So much love that he's willing to let his Son die for us. That's more love than we usually can show to anybody or even understand. Maybe the question is, are we even looking for that love in our relationship with our Father in heaven? May we always be looking for the joy that he had meant for us to have and to share. Amen.